out of so what are you feeling?
And it's so loud, and it's so wide, till we're all drunk, then it's so fast, then it's all over.
Go home, go sleep, wake up, get sober.
What a great night. And it's so loud, and it's so wide, till we're all drunk, then it's so fast.
Because we don't spend any money or time actually looking at the damn sky. We until quite recently, until that thing came down and scared a lot of Russians, we didn't really spend much money at all. If we found things, it was normally by chance. And that's changing now. The UN have actually put in a dangerous asteroid kind of group, and people putting money in to actually find these damn things. But yeah, racism.
Same thing happened with tsunamis, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone was like, "The what? Tidal waves? That'd be ridiculous." Yeah. And then boom, hundreds of thousands of people wiped out. It's like, hey, wait, that could happen anywhere.
Yeah.
Then it didn't even look cool, that tsunami. Like I heard that news. It was on Christmas Day.
It was
Boxing Day.
And I heard the news and everything. Oh, cool, a tsunami. I thought it was going to be like one of those meteor movies where a big meteor hits the ocean and you get this thing that's as big as a mountain and, you know, you could surf it. And said it was just, like, bloody horrible and miserable and killed lots of people and didn't look cool at all.
Yeah, that's the thing. Same thing. I've looked at a couple now, like the one in Japan with the Fukushima one, and it's just kind of a tide that never stops. It just comes and it comes and it comes and it just keeps rising and rising, and you just keep moving backwards, and then there's nowhere to move because it's come around, and it just keeps going. It's just this endless rising of the tide. It's in some ways that's just even worse. It's just because you're not like, oh no, I'm dead, there's a wall of water that's hitting me at 100 k's an hour. It's this, oh, I'm gonna drown, and I know I'm gonna drown. I have a long time to think about this. It's not good.
Surely, like, if a meteor, like a big meteor, like a Hollywood meteor hit, though, you'd get a cool Hollywood style
absolutely
out of it.
That's the thing. If something really big, I'm talking like a kilometer across, punches into the ocean, it will, depending on how fast it's going, it'll probably penetrate to the sea floor pretty quickly, I mean, straight away. And now you've got this, this hole in the water for a split second that is literally a hole in the water, nothing there, it's just all been vaporized. And it's probably 5 kilometers across. And then, of course, water will charge into the center, and then it will slosh back, and you've got this wave, and you've got wave after wave as this thing sloshes back and forth. So you'd get this pulse of tidal waves.
You would get the infamous tsunami wave train.
That's right. And
my favorite phrase from the end of the world.
And it's no fun at all for anyone. And each one's weaker than the one before. But if it hit the Pacific, it would something that size, a kilometer across, would devastate every coastal city on the Pacific. And that's a lot of cities. It would go everywhere, absolutely everywhere. Because the Pacific Ocean, let's face it, there's nothing going to stop you or stop the wave between where it strikes and the landfall, wherever that landfall might be.
No, it's just, it's a big bowl, really.
Yeah,
isn't it?
That's right.
And big salad bowl.
And it's ready to go, absolutely. Like, yeah, just slosh all over the place. It wouldn't be good. And it can get up to like 800 kilometers an hour, a wave of that magnitude and from that sort of thing. 800 k's an hour and could be up to like 100 meters tall. So it's
is there see 100 meters? That doesn't sound like much, though.
I'm sorry to disappoint.
You're talking to someone who is currently sitting a meter and 55 centimeters above the high tide mark.
I don't know. I think I'm higher than 100 meters, though. I reckon I'd be right.
You are so not higher than 100 meters.
I live on top of a hill.
Yeah.
It's a pretty high hill.
It's not a high hill.
I reckon I'd be right. I reckon you'd need a bigger asteroid.
We're going to need a bigger asteroid.
Are you talking about the hill that you live on that's right next to the Brisbane River?
Yeah, you're doomed. You're doomed, JV. Sorry about that.
No, I all the way through the floods, I just sat here with martinis mocking.
Yeah, floods.
The 4 meter floods.
Very different.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah.
The big problem I had living on a hill myself, the problem I had with a flood was not the water coming from the river, but the water backing up into the drain and maybe threatening the cars in the underground car park. It didn't, but you know, we had a sleepless 10 minutes when I was thinking about it, went down and checked it, everything was fine. No, no, this is a whole different kettle of fish. You're talking about a 100-meter-tall wave coming at 800 kilometers an hour. By the time it reaches the ground, it can climb. It has a lot of inertia. It will go up that hill. It doesn't just say, it's not like 100 meters and that's it. It hits the shoreline at 100 meters and just goes and climbs up things. And it has all that energy.
Although, you are forgetting that JB has a gold-plated hovercraft.
This is true.
Which to escape.
Known very, yeah. very well as a notoriously unstable vehicle.
Gold is not the lightest of engineering materials, is it?
Yeah, it's for stability. I think
there's a lot of big fans there.
I think I'd be okay. So how far inland would I have to take my hovercraft to stay in front of this wave?
In Queensland, I'd want to get to Toowoomba. Seriously, Toowoomba up into the highlands, because it's a very gradual slope in Queensland. I mean, southeast corner, of course. And it's there's no really great big places to get to. You don't be anywhere near the ocean and just go inland as far as you can and get there fast. But if it came out of nowhere, you wouldn't know. That's the thing. If one landed between us and New Zealand, let's say, a giant 1 kilometre across thing and just came at us, we would have no time to move.
No, but you were saying that it only moves at 800 kilometres
the wave, an hour? The wave does, yes.
800 kilometres an hour?
Yes.
Well, that's as fast as a jet.
Yes.
And jets take ages to get.
Well, 3 hours to New Zealand. 3 hours to New Zealand. So an hour and a half would take the wave.
Well, yeah, you've forgotten about customs and having to pay that frigging tax to leave the country.
So what was your plan, Greg? Like, how are you going to protect this? I mean, not that I need protecting, because I got, you know, the hill and the hovercraft and stuff. But, you know, like everybody else is looking to you.
Looking to me. Well,
to protect them.
The interesting point is you've got time. The one I was looking at was Apophis. And it's not going to hit us anytime soon, but the people were worried that it was going to hit us in 2029 and then maybe in 2036, but it's been shown categorically that's not going to happen. So, but my assignment was what happens, or my project was what happens if it did hit us in 2029. And that gives you quite a bit of time, because it's not coming tomorrow. You've got a decade and a half to deal with it. So the long and short of it, there's lots of different versions. You could...
big tennis racket?
that comes under the impactor theory. Like, you can whack the hell out of it, so you can put a nuke in it. And you can take something like a 4-megaton nuke and put it inside it and detonate it and shatter the damn thing. Like, Apophis is only about 400 meters across, by the way, so it's not... If it punched into the ground, it wouldn't... It'd be bad, but it wouldn't be like a end-of-the-world scenario thing. It would just be a city killer. If it hit Brisbane, it would wipe out the southeast corner pretty much, roughly. It'd be bad. A bit worse than the Tunguska event, the 1908 Tunguska event.
I heard that was aliens, though.
Yeah, of course. That's definitely what it was. Or the last one I heard was an antimatter star. You're like, what? People just make up words. Anyway, so an impactor, you can nuke it under the surface, but if you nuke something, the problem, it sounds great, but then now you've got a shotgun blast of material going everywhere, so that's probably not the best idea. The other one is to put a nuclear weapon, like a 1-megaton nuclear weapon, about 20 meters off the surface of this asteroid. To like point out, Apophis is quite a big stony thing. It's not like a big rubble pile, so we think it's pretty solid anyway. So you detonate a 1-megaton nuclear weapon right next to it, and it gives it a shove, and it shoves it off in a new direction, so you can try that one. That was my backup plan, if it all goes to fail. That was my backup plan. But my big plan, which is going to really upset people because it doesn't involve blowing things up, was a gravity tractor. What you do is you take...
Fucking gravity tractor. Go on.
It's like interstellar farming.
Pretty much. You put...
Unfold a big sail.
No, no, no. Not sails. That was one of those. No, we use ion thrusters.
Go on, get along there, little asteroid.
Pretty much, though. You put a 1-ton satellite where you want it to go, in front of it, and it attracts the satellite, and the satellite attracts it. And you just keep the ion thrusters going so that it constantly moves away from the asteroid. They sort of stay together, if that makes sense, because they're gravitationally attracted. And in the space of about 6 months, you've actually given it enough, changed its vector enough, so it's no longer going to hit the Earth in 6 months. So it might take you 3 years to get to it on a really low energy orbit. So you got to get there first. So you get out there, you don't want to spend a lot of time, a lot of energy doing it. So you spend 3 years getting to it, a year setting up, and then you spend 6 months getting it out of the way. And then if that...
But hang on, you're sort of whipping it out there to meet it, but then it's got to change direction and come back the other way.
What? Hang on, sorry?
Oh. Well, it's got to be coming.
Hadn't thought of that.
No, I had. Yes, I had. That's why it takes 3 years, Dan. You're not firing it like a gun at it. You put it in an orbit that circles around. That's why it's 3 years. So it takes this very, very, what's it called, a Hohmann transfer orbit, and it comes around the side basically and joins up. It joins.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and that's why it takes 3 years. But it's boring. That's the problem. Everyone wants to blow the tar out of it.
That's the fatal flaw in this plan. You're not firing anything like a gun.
Isn't there one that involves painting the side of it white?
You paint one side of it white or reflective, and basically that means that when that side is pointing towards the sun, it's getting more of a kick from the photons, so therefore it actually changes or can change its trajectory in a certain way. It's really, really hard to work out what parts to paint and what albedo it'll have and that sort of stuff. So it's a little bit too frou-frou for me. I was like, you couldn't show that it would definitely do something in the time you needed to do it.
If it were up to me, I'd send out some Vikings just to row it in a different direction.
Yes. Well, that's what I did, but I just called it a gravity tractor instead of space Vikings. But maybe I'd get more money if I called it space Vikings.
Space Vikings is saleable, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. Thor and the Space Viking Project. I'd like that. But what's really interesting about this, beyond, you know, gravity tractors and bombs and that sort of stuff, is that we have the technology to do it. We can deflect a 400-meter across asteroid. We can even deflect or destroy up to like a kilometer. Anything beyond a kilometer, we're starting to get into trouble. And unfortunately, when you're talking about beyond a kilometer, you're starting to get into what killed the dinosaurs territory. So when that comes, we don't really know what to do yet, which I think is panic, run in a circle.
Throw some dinosaurs in the way.
What's it? I put it up at the burger the other week. So it's some scale. Is it the Torino scale?
Torino scale, yes.
Yeah, where they just give up.
10. 10 is like the President of the United States picks, you know, the 10,000 people to go into the bunker underground forever sort of thing. The worst we've ever had was actually Apophis. Apophis got up to a 4. When they sort of said, oh, Apophis, when it might hit us in 2029, but if it goes to the special area in space called the keyhole, that will give it enough a gravitational change of trajectory for around the Earth, and in 2036 it will hit us. So and people went, oh, so there's a chance it could hit us. And, oh, it's a possibility. And that, so that jumped it to 4. But as soon as they realized it wasn't going to hit that keyhole, it dropped it back to 0. So I think it went 0, 1, 4, back to 0. Nothing else sits higher than 0 at the moment.
You got to wonder whether, like, if something did pop up, whether or not all of the fucking, like, fucking climate change deniers would suddenly have a new bandwagon to jump on. Or is it just those scientists trying to keep themselves in Rolls Royces?
The big problem.
That's the people I'd be thinking of when it struck as like, oh, I'm going to die, but at least those people will too.
I guess, though, the big difference is people can argue and cherry-pick the data for climate change or anthropogenic climate change, but you can't really pick the data for a dirty great rock. Seeing that we know, you couldn't say it's never happened before, we know it one wiped out the dinosaurs and any mammal, any life that was bigger than 25 kilograms.
No. Weren't those dinosaurs planted there by Satan?
I'll say no. we know that this has happened before, and it happens on a spooky regularity. Chelyabinsk, honestly, the Chelyabinsk meteor in 2012 scared the piss out of the world. It really did. And it's one of the most positive things that happened, because no one died in Russia. It did a lot of damage, lots of broken glass, and scared a lot of people. And that's exactly what we needed, to create government organizations and intergovernmental or extra-government organizations to control this sort of stuff. It's brilliant.
Because the UN's got a... It's got like a little office somewhere now, doesn't it?
Yes,
like
the
Defenders of the Earth or some shit.
Pretty much. And they, I mean, they're only, what they say is, okay, so like, let's say America discovers a giant asteroid. They take it to the UN. The UN goes, holy crap. And then they go, right, who can help? Who can put what into what? And then they form like different agencies to try and take it out. But hopefully we'd have a decade. If we have less than like a year or two, things get a little bit hairy, but we can still do it. Like a 400 meter across, that's the impactor theory. I would run a non-nuclear impactor. So you take a ton spike and you ram it in it at as fast as you can go, and that will give it a kick. But unfortunately, once again, the physics get a bit gloopy, and it's hard to know.
Yeah, exactly. You know who'd save us under those circumstances?
Bruce Willis?
Elon Musk.
Yes.
And Bruce Willis.
Elon Musk would fire Bruce Willis at it, and and that would be all we'd need.
We need a blunt object to throw at this thing.
Yes, I must admit, I have a huge man crush on Elon Musk. I really do. That dude's got it going on. In fact, what part of his I wanted to use one of his rockets, one of his future planned rockets, for my assignment, but unfortunately they went, that's not real yet, you can't use it. So I was like, oh, damn it.
Oh, yeah, I bet you could. I bet you he's got, like, at least three in a secret base somewhere, just in case.
All I can hear in my head...
Just in case we need them.
All I can hear in my head is the Bond music. Da 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 da. Elon Musk. Yes, Malcolm. Unfortunately, he's kind of like a... I'm hoping, anyway. He's kind of like a good Bond villain.
I'd like to get Elon Musk and Richard Branson and put them in a big jar with holes in the lid and see which one eats the other.
Is Richard Branson actually into saving people, though? I mean, isn't he just kind of...
No, he's desperately trying to save his airline.
Ah, right.
He was quoted as saying, the best way to become a millionaire is to start off as a billionaire and buy an airline.
Yes. So hopefully, everyone, we've solved the problem now, and my 10,000-word project will come back and they'll say, not only are we giving you an A... or seven, I should say. We also saved the world quietly. I'll go, oh, thank you. We can't tell anyone, ever.
What we'll do is we'll send up your actual assignment, and the mass of that will drag it off course.
We're going to print it on a dot matrix printer. And
triple spaced. So, say you failed.
Oh, no.
Like, you failed the assignment.
Oh, man. Thanks.
And it hits us.
Yep.
So... what would be your preferred option for post-apocalyptic transport?
I would strap a couple of ruses together just to intimidate people and ride around standing on the back of two duct-taped ruses.
You would need to take them together, though, wouldn't you? Like, you couldn't have one leg on each ruse.
No, no. That'd be like Van Damme. Have you guys seen that viral marketing Volvo ad with Van Damme doing splits on two trucks at the same time?
No, I saw it referred to.
Go watch it immediately.
Referenced on Twitter. It's good, isn't
it's
it?
I was actually very... He actually does the stunt. He's standing on the rearview mirror. There's two trucks are reversing at speed, and it's on his face, and it pulls back, and he starts doing the splits because the trucks move out from under him, and he's doing it really. I went and looked it up on Snopes. He actually does that stunt, and it's pretty impressive. You kind of go, up. Van Damme can still do the splits. That's good to know.
Yeah, he's got his hips are all powder now.
He has got an oldie because he's not in movies anymore. I mean, we're all getting older.
No.
But he is.
Well, there was a wasn't there a video JCVD or something about the tragedy that is later life Jean-Claude Van Damme.
I heard something about this. Yeah, it's Jean-Claude Van Damme playing himself.
Yeah. Like that's exactly right. It's sort of like a docudrama or something, and it's very sad.
Well, to go back to your question before, how I would get around, I think I would take notes from Beyond the Thunderdome, the Mad Max Beyond the Thunderdome, and I'd just lose a bit more weight, and I'd find a large person to sit on, and I'd be a giant helmet, and I'd be master to his blaster. That would be it. I'd go, go, Blaster! Attack him! And then we'd race off somewhere.
The reason I asked this, I think it was Cracked. I'm on the weekly email from cracked.com.
Where all our research comes from now, I see.
That's right. We did the research. We got the email from Cracked.
We did the plagiarism. We've got the segment ready to go.
I got one about 2-3 weeks ago. And I came across it this afternoon. And I was thinking, what am I going to talk to these clowns about tonight? And it was this... this essay, you know, Cracked has these things occasionally about how you never see bicycles in the apocalypse.
Yes.
And they were pointing out that, you know, it's actually, you know, as you know, I'm not a bicycle man, but I understand the argument that
you're
at
quite anti-bicycle traditionally, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. You know, they have their places, and their place might well be at the end of civilization as we know it. And the reason I say this is that I recall from Stephen King's The Stand that a couple of the characters there decided to go for bikes to, you know, pedal their way across post-apocalyptic America because they covered a lot more ground. But also, you know, at the end of the world, you've got freeways full of cars, mm. and you can't get gas out of the gas stations, and you know, if you've had some kind of electromagnetic pulse, most cars don't work anymore, and you know, bikes are the go under those circumstances. And you know, you keep your fitness up, you lose a bit of weight.
Yeah. But I don't know. I sort of see. I don't know about that because you can. I know you can move faster on a bike, but only when it's flat. Like if it's up and down hills and things. Where I live, people.
You need some sort of bike specially designed for climbing mountains, mountain bike. That's crazy.
It's still not easy to go up these damn hills on a mountain bike. It's not a matter of going. Oh, I'm now a mountain bike, therefore I climb that hill. I mean, you go quite slowly.
It's just as easy as walking it.
No, it's not.
Like, if you put it into its highest gear.
No, it's not.
Yeah, you put it into its lowest gear.
No way. Yeah. No way.
The ones where you're spinning the cogs like six times for every 60 centimetres that you travel.
Uh-huh. See, that doesn't sound like that's easy. That sounds like really hard.
That does sound like a lot of energy to go up a hill.
Like, particularly if you've got like a zombie on your ass.
And it's shambling.
Like pedaling. But I suppose
the point here is we could just get off the damn bike and push it up the hill.
Yeah, put it over your shoulder and run up the hill with it.
This is why I start thinking maybe Crack doesn't know what they're talking about. Because, you know, you're in the end of the world and it doesn't really matter. You know, you're running away from zombies. You're running away from some piss weak, 100-metre tall tsunami. And you've got a
Terminators bike
across your shoulder.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not just drop the bike, run up the hill, and pick up another bike on the other side.
Yes, that's it. You probably would find another bike somewhere.
Yeah, but I imagine that eventually most of the bikes would end up at the bottom of slopes rather than at the top of slopes through natural attrition.
It'd be like interval training, wouldn't it?
I think the real problem is, have you ever tried to pedal on a bike which has a flat? Like, if those things puncture like nobody's business, especially in a post-apocalyptic world where there's, you know, robot parts
and an inordinate amount of spikes for no reason.
Yeah, lots of spikes. Mm. You run over a silver boomerang and pop.
Yeah, and you're done. Mm. And also they're not safer either. I mean, my experience when I for about 6 months for a certain job, I rode home every day and rode to work, and I quite enjoyed it. But it was the only time in my life where. Oh, shit, that's not true. But I had an accident where I came off a bike because I saw a snake in front of me and I accidentally skidded too hard down a hill and smashed my elbow and concussed myself. So now, because I'm in the 21st century and was lying there, people came to my aid. But if I was being surrounded by zombies, I'd be eaten by now. So if I was in a car and saw a snake, I would have just run it over. Or maybe I would have crashed into a tree and been a bit so sore and backed up and then kept going. Like,
you should have a sword.
I would have stabbed myself by now.
You want to ride a bicycle with a sword, JB? Yeah. This is your idea for keeping yourself safe.
Or at least dying.
From snakes.
I don't think the council would be very happy as I traveled down the bikeways. I was swinging a katana wildly. I can't see that going down well.
Swing it wildly. It's more of a flicking.
No, JB, if it's me, I'm going to be swinging it wildly, okay? I have no illusions about my use of a katana. I will be swinging it like a crazy windmill of death.
I tell you what piece of transport would be useful in an apocalyptic scenario is a sailboat.
Only in some kind of water world.
Well, I mean, even without the water world scenario of the entire globe being covered in water, we're still at a point where 2/3 of the globe are covered in water.
Yeah, you can go up and down the coast.
Well, unless you're in that bit that the asteroid hits. Wouldn't be much good then, would it, Smarty?
Well, you could surf it. I mean, it's going to be more use than a bicycle.
You wouldn't have to surf it, though. As long as you wouldn't be right next to it. As long as you were a fair distance from it and not near the coastline, you probably wouldn't even detect it. It would just be a swell underneath you that would go underneath, a big swell, because it's only when it gets close to the surface, as opposed to the shallow ends, would it actually sort of loom up out of anywhere. Now, you wouldn't want to be right next to it. That would be that would be bad. But
but whether you're on a bicycle or a boat, yeah, it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't really matter, yeah. But you're right. If you had a boat and you knew how to use it, a sailboat, a big catamaran, just like in Waterworld, then you could really tack up and down the coast of Queensland and get a long distance a lot of the time and beach it and then get some food and go again. It would probably be a really good place to be, actually. Chances of zombies coming, limited. And
but not completely zero. I mean, I was reviewing Professor Brooks' zombie masterpiece the other day. There were a lot of zombies bobbing around.
Yeah.
No.
If I remember correctly from reading Dr. Brooks's work, they don't bob at all. They wander along the bottom.
Yes. and they walk. They walk from continental mass to continental mass, which is a heck of a heck of a hike. If you think about it. But anyway, but that's true. In the shallow waters, you have to watch out for zombie reef. That would be something new and exciting to look for.
Yeah, yeah.
But all you'd have to do is on your winged keel, which, yeah, being Australian, I demand was on my boat. I put some sharpened boomerangs on it. It'd be fine. So as you're going across your zombie reef, just be like.
Well, you couldn't anchor, could you?
Because
the damn thing that would be the crucial mistake you would make. As soon as you drop the anchor,
you could be in trouble.
You'd have the dripping dead coming up the chain.
But there are sea anchors. You can get a sea anchor that can keep you roughly in the pointing in the right direction, and you keep it out at sea, so your boat's not sort of being dragged off too much, and you're not touching it to the bottom of the ocean either. So it's yes, you are moving, but not too much. And if you're out in the open ocean, that's okay. You shouldn't. A zombie apocalypse could be problematic. I see what you're saying.
I think the theory I'm working towards is that each form of transport is probably best suited to one or two forms of apocalypse.
Yeah.
But completely ill-suited to a particular form. Like, you know, bicycles, for instance. Very poor choice in a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, or triffids. Triffids, but they wouldn't be very good for triffids either. Sorry, I'm just going for a bit of classic.
Ride a triffid?
No.
Could you do that?
No. You can.
Presumably you could. You'd need some kind of bridle arrangement.
You want to make sure you take out its whip tongue, because they've got a whip tongue that poisons you. So as long as you can catch that or cut it out, it can't actually hurt you. So you could then use it, but they're not very fast. They're zombie shambling plants, so, you know, they're not that quick. So I don't know why we're riding the triffid. What I meant was in a triffid apocalypse, you wouldn't want to ride a bike, because you'd go past the greenhouse and suddenly whip and your plant food.
Yeah.
So,
and with zombies, easy to grab you. What you'd want is a slouch bike, so you zip underneath them under their arms.
I'd rather be dead. Like that, seriously. I would just rather be dead. Every time I see them, they drive around in Brisbane. I see them and I just kind of look at them and go, they always look so happy. Like these, they're so happy.
Well, they're nestled in the womb of the bike.
And I always go, what do they know? I'm so angry and I hate them, but maybe they've hit on something here that I just
I think that's out. What makes them happy. It's your hatred and anger that is making them happy.
I saw this ridiculous vessel the other day. It was kind of like a giant adult scooter, but bike-sized. But in order to make it go, there was like some sort of exercise machine on the back where you sort of push down the left side and then push down the right side. And it was this weird walking machine on a bike that made the bike go forward.
Okay.
You can't even envisage it, can you?
No.
It is...
I keep just defaulting back to slouch biker.
No, this is the complete opposite. It's a standing up bike. You're not even sitting down.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You're on a walking machine on a bike. So it's pumping. So you pump left and right and left and right. And
like a Stairmaster with wheels.
Yeah. Yeah.
I actually, my father was talking about it. My father's getting older and he loves bike riding, but he can't kind of do it like he used to. So he's actually going to go and buy a $2,000 device for his bike. It's an engine that he has to pedal to make it go, but it stores some of his power up. And then when it gets to a certain level of difficulty, like going up a hill, it kicks the battery in and it takes over some like 20, 30, 50% of the pedaling for you. Maybe that's the answer. Maybe because you're giving it more battery power. You're powering it up. And then when you need it, when you go, holy shit, zombies, you can press the button and go, wah, at 25 k's an hour, and you're away.
They're planning on replacing the motorbikes in the New Zealand Postal Service with them.
Exactly, yeah, that's where I first saw them too, yeah. They already have, in fact. They're doing a trial right now. This is a device that, it adds half a kilogram of weight to your bike. Half a kilogram, which is nothing.
That's not too bad.
No, not at all. That's right. And I think it's weak because the ion lithium battery.
Think about the heavy load of shame that comes with it.
Why is there shame? Why is there shame?
And the humiliation, the shame. Not just for you personally, but the very civilization which threw this thing up in the first place.
JB would rather compensate his cycling prowess the proper traditional way by injecting a lot of drugs.
No, you're probably right. Like, you know, I mean, I would be more confident of my ability to cycle through the zombie apocalypse if I was chock full of roids.
That's it. That's your mode of transportation is no transportation at all. Just inject yourself full of roids and just and rush through the zombie.
And swing a machete at anything that comes in your way.
Just 8 foot wide. I guess the one thing we haven't mentioned here is that, of course, cars wouldn't be much chopped because you'd run out of fuel pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well, and that's right. Like there's, I think in the Stephen King book Cell, which is his zombie apocalypse.
Is that the mobile phone one?
Yeah, that's a spooky book. That gave me nightmares. They do use cars a little bit in that to get around, but the roads are actually dangerous because they're full of crazy fuckers who have just, you know, gone crazy and they're driving cars everywhere really quickly.
So they're not zombies, they're just mad.
Yeah, they're just, he has a name for them. Like, you know, the characters come up with some nickname for these things and they're just people who just hop in cars and drive really, really quickly everywhere.
Try and ram you?
Yeah, well, in fact, without going into spoilers, one of the characters does get killed by one of these things. And it's one of those great Stephen King moments where, you know, the story is going in one direction and then all of a sudden one of these things just appears out of the blue. It just plasters, you know, very a great and, you know, I presume a very popular character all over the page. And so the story has to go off in a different direction. And you just look at it and think, I reckon he just pulled that name out of a hat.
That sounds familiar, John. That sounds
That sounds like a sociopath that I'm familiar with.
I recognise the type.
I will never forgive you for Dan.
Poor Dan.
So I think the big issue with having a bike, even an electric bike, is even now with our civilization kind of working, so many car owners are already like sociopathically angry about bikes that they you know, you pay your rego or die kind of situation. If you took away society protecting you, you could be riding down a highway and every bugger and their dog would just come and hunt you down and kill you.
I've got a week to live. I'm going to take out as many cyclists as possible.
That guy's got his lycra's ass pointed at me. Get my jousting hook. You wouldn't last long. They would come for you. Open a door. Open door. Thump. Keep going. You wouldn't last long. It's not worth it.
So what kind of apocalypse would you ride a bike through?
The Jane Eyre apocalypse.
A genteel apocalypse.
Yes, yes. One
like a drawing room apocalypse. A John Wyndham style.
Yes.
A John Wyndham apocalypse where everyone wears tweed.
That's kind of a triffid. So that's, and you go, Marjorie wants cucumber sandwiches. I'd better ride the Vespa down to the, not Vespa, I'd better ride the bicycle down to the vicarage and see
the
how.
The Malvern Star?
Yeah, the Malvern Star, thank you. The Malvern Star down to the vicarage and make sure the pastor has enough cucumbers. I mean, it's that sort of thing. It'd be lovely.
Well, Nicole Kidman showed us just how viable a BMX bike can be in a dangerous situation.
That's true. That's very true. In fact, I heard it's how she got out of her marriage with Tom Cruise.
She managed to use a BMX to jump over the compound.
That's right. She and dazzle them with her backwards ollie and that sort of stuff. They were quite impressed.
I think I'm going to do a blog post, some kind of taxonomy of post-apocalypse transport. You'd need like an X and a Y axis, wouldn't you? So you'd have like a pond across the bottom. You'd have your different types of apocalypse and then going up. The X or the Y. Hmm. You'd have your modes of transport.
In a robot apocalypse, like, you're going to need... I mean, a bicycle would come in fairly handy there, wouldn't it?
Well, as long as they didn't have AI, I guess so.
Yeah, you don't want to be driving a Prius during a robot apocalypse.
It's a serious question. In a robot apocalypse, you've got to figure that the AIs have turned.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you can't use motorized transport because if you get to the point where your robots have turned on you, you are definitely into the realm of the self-driving car.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I somewhere on the internet today, I read self-driving cars 10 years from now.
Yeah.
No worries. None of us will drive. We'll just be driven by our cars. So at that point, you've got to figure cars are out.
Have you read the book Robo Apocalypse? I can't remember the author, but he basically did a Max Brooks style thing, but for when robots rise up. it's sort of interesting. It's set slightly, it's like 20 years in the future, and that's how it kind of begins. Suddenly, a lot of fatalities on the road, and people in their cars screaming and like thumping at the wheel and trying to get out the window and that sort of stuff, and the cars just backing over people, and you know, seeing a whole mall full of people and just charging into a glass mall and just mowing people down left, right, and centre.
That sounds like that great Aussie film from the 70s, Cars That Ate Paris.
I suppose it does. Who wrote Robo Apocalypse? Oh, I need to know now.
Oh, hold on, I'm going to reach across for my iPad.
I've got it here. Oh, iPad Air, here we go. It's Daniel H. Wilson, and it was brought out in June 2011. The old iPad 2 still has some life in it, John.
Well, you know, my iPad really was on a velvet cushion on the other side of the room, and I was trying to... You know, reach over to it without getting too far.
Where I had to summon my iPad 2 from the cold snow where it was carving wood with its beveled edge. Oh, it's a mighty machine.
My Apple Newton is trying to look up Robert Poland, so I don't know what that means. So you injured yourself recently, JB.
I did, mate. It's why we didn't bother recording last week, because I just knew I wasn't up for the editing. It's one of those embarrassing injuries.
Is it a groin injury?
You're editing with your penis?
Oh, I'm not embarrassed by my groin injuries.
I just thought that footballers always get groin injuries. It's one of the things, I don't know much about football. I know they seem to not treat women very well, and they seem to pull their groins a lot, which just makes me giggle like a four-year-old all the time.
I accidentally injured it by putting it into a woman who was too young.
Oh.
Well, allegedly.
There is just as there is a season for everything, there is a season for groin injuries. And it is in the final 2 weeks before the first kickoff of the actual football season, where the media and the fans have whipped themselves up into an absolute spoofy lather of anticipation, but have got nothing to write about or read about. And so consequently, you know, the sports pages just fill up with one destroyed groin after
crotch apocalypse.
And then you'll find
it's a tunnel ball apocalypse.
You cannot use a bicycle during the crotch apocalypse. It does not.
No, very that's painful. Yeah, you definitely need something a lot softer, a lot more pleasant.
You could, I'm sure you get Wolfram Alpha to do it for you. Just do a little like content analysis of every season for the past 20 years. You just see those last 2 weeks, it's all about the groins.
But your shoulder.
My groin is fine.
Oh, good. Phew.
No, it's my, what are they, my C5, C6 disc, I think, whatever the one is at the back of the neck. It's, I don't know, it's crushed or mangled or some shit. Anyway, there's a
who's letting off small firecrackers in the background?
Sorry, that was me.
What the fuck was that?
Nothing. It's all good. Sorry.
We are desperately
I'm going to make a guess. This is like old school radio, you know, name that sound. What it sounded like.
Do it again. Here you go. Now you're listening.
Yeah.
There you go.
No, I'm going to change. Okay. I thought what he was doing was licking the suction caps of like rubber, like suction cap bullets from a gun and sticking them on his forehead and pulling them off. But it sounded, it would sound more organic. That sounds quite mechanical.
It sounded to me like he was stapling the microphone to something.
Sorry. I won't do it again. I was firing a Nerf gun one-handed. Sorry.
What? Sorry. I was trying to keep things quiet, but I was firing a gun.
A Nerf gun.
Yeah.
Sorry, all this talk of apocalypse has got me excited. Anyway, sorry. It's right. Moving on. Sorry, I apologize.
Yeah, anyway, no, I'm fucked. I haven't exercised in about 4 or 5 weeks.
Oh.
And I've got, like, my fingers are constantly either numb or tingling with pins and needles, and it feels like someone has got their iron thumb and they're digging it into a nerve point about halfway along the arm. So it's deeply unpleasant.
That's a spinal injury, is that the C5, C6 thing?
Yeah.
Ouch. Yeah, okay. So, and that's, is that affecting your writing? That must be hard if your hands are hurting, because that's what you use to get your brain thoughts out.
Look, it would, except I had that mishap a couple of years ago that pushed me into the embrace of dictation.
Okay.
Actually...
remember his William Shatner motif?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. And in the first couple of weeks I was using it, I used to dictate like Shatner. No, it was true. This is primitive software. I had to speak in an American accent because they didn't recognize the Australian accent. And I had to speak like William Shatner, stopping every now and then to allow the dictation software to catch up.
I just have this image of character died off screen, off the page, many months previous to this moment.
I just had this image in my head of John doing his own version of Rocket Man. She packed my bags last night, pre-flight. In fact, I would pay money for that, JB. I would pay money. Real Australian dollars. If you
okay, I think we've figured out how to monetize this blog.
John will do any song you like, only in dictation software singing. That's all he'll do.
You get the transcript too.
Join in, kids, for the fun experience.
Greg, you've been doing a lot of exercise recently. You've been dropping the pounds.
I have been, yeah. I've been exercising a lot, yes.
Why is that, mate?
I don't know. I just reached a point where I was sick of being sort of known as and especially, you know, with Dan and I, Greg's the chubby one. I don't know. I just sort of got sick of being overweight and making lots of excuses while I was overweight. So I just thought one day I don't have to be anymore. It was a really weird situation. Like, for years I've been thinking about it and talking about it and talking about thinking about it and thinking about talking about it, but never actually doing it, always sort of falling off the wagon. But something changed in my brain and I finally went, no, I'm going to go do this and do it properly. And
so there was no, it wasn't like an external thing. You didn't have a moment where you realised, oh, fuck, this is it. It's my last chance. I've got to do something.
I suppose so. Well, I'm 39 now, so 40's kind of looming up at me, and maybe that's it. Maybe it's a midlife crisis or something. But it's basically, I just thought this is my chance to be healthier. And from this moment on, everything is probably going to go twang and fall off me and collapse and prolapse pretty quickly. So,
in fact, you are exactly right.
Hooray!
That's all you got to look forward to.
So, yeah, I've been doing a lot of running. That's sort of been my thing, getting into running. Which, if you said to me a year ago that I could run, that I could now consider myself a runner, I would have laughed in your face because I hadn't run for years. But now it's, I can actually run and run like kilometres at a time for...
You know. So do you get into the kit, the tech? You got any cool gear that you take with you? Or are you like old school? You just get out and chew up the bitumen?
I did.
You get scorpions to bite him first. Fiddle him with the adrenaline he needs.
No, I like convergent technology. I'm not one for lots of gadgets. I like all my gadgets to fit into one thing. So it comes down to my smartphone is sort of my... It's my diary, and it's my calendar, and it's my notebook, and it's my phone, and all the rest. And it's also now my exercise buddy. So I've used different apps to begin with. It kind of got me out. The whole couch to 5K thing. Like to
And that was all. That's a good one.
It's a really good one. I really, really... one called Get Running, I really support. It worked very well for me, and which uses couch to 5K. And, that's all in my phone. So I could listen to a podcast or listen to music whilst running. And also it would time me and it would keep my distance and it would work out where I was. It did everything for me. Now I don't need it so much. Like I now know what my body can do. So I'm happy to do it on my own. But that reassurance that there's a mechanical lady in your ear going, "You're awesome," was actually really useful to begin with.
I mean, I had a Fitbit, which I got last Christmas, and I think I'm on my second one now because I bricked my first one by, installing a software update over a bodgy Wi-Fi network. And then I put the new one on, but I just had this week where, because I wasn't wearing it, I wasn't that bothered with it. And it was difficult to go back because I got to a point where I could tell you at any time of the day within about 100 steps how many steps I'd taken.
Yeah.
Jane asked, the other day we took the dog out for a walk and, Jane said at the end of it, how long do you reckon that was without even thinking about it? I said 3,800 steps.
Yeah.
And I had a look, and it was about 3,600. But, you know, that was pretty accurate.
That's pretty good. So you become your own. I love knowing that. That was one of the things I started. I've been doing that for years, in fact. I became a walker before I became a runner. So I would walk an hour and a half.
I remember before that you were crawling.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. No, I never crawled. It's a weird thing. I never crawled. As a baby, I went straight from lying and gurgling, having older sisters carry me around like a prince, to walking. It's actually an embarrassingly fun story. So I was a little fat Buddha of a kid, like a baby toddler, and I had two older sisters, 4 and 6 years old, and they just thought the bees, I was the best toy ever. And I would literally gurgle like Jabba, they go, blah, 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 and my sisters would take me to whatever I was pointing at, or bring whatever I was pointing at to me, depending on the size. So I never walked until I was over a year old, like nearly 2 years old, a long, long time. And my mom sort of took me to the doctors, and they sort of turned me over, and they probed me, and they went, "Oh, he's okay. He's not crawling. Oh, he's just lazy." So when his sisters go to school, what you need to do, Mrs. Robotham, is don't feed him. He looks like he likes a good feed, so don't feed him. Just leave him in the cot and never answer him. And Mum said it was the hardest morning of her life. Her baby boy, I'm screaming my guts out, like ah, Dad, I want to be fed everything, ah. And then my mom said it all went quiet, and she's sitting there crying in the kitchen with her cup of coffee, just crying and crying and crying. And then at about 10:45, I come out of the bedroom into the kitchen, and I'm not crawling, I'm walking by myself. She'd never seen me walk. I'd kept it secret the whole time that I could walk. Now, that's a cunning kid. That's a disturbingly cunning child.
Then he pushed open the door and said, "Mother, how dare right. you?"
And I fired the gun at her.
Stop it.
But yeah, so let's say I'm predisposed to not moving. So I became a walker for a long time and did a lot of walking. And then a friend of mine, well, I was telling him that, and he went, "Walking, that's nothing. You might as well just be fat." I'm like, "Oh." So later on, I got into running. And think they're push-ups and sit-ups and that sort of stuff too. So it's, I don't know. It's my last gasp, my last chance of being vaguely healthy. And it's not that hard to do. It's prioritizing. It really is. Like, I make a priority to do it now. I say, "No, this hour I'm going to spend exercising."
You got it.
Yes.
Because it's just so fucking easy to find something else to do. And,
or find nothing to do. That's the big
thing. Yeah. Look, if you're looking for an excuse, you'll always find it. Like, I find when I get on a deadline, that's the time when I really, really need to maintain fitness. But, of course, I just got a built-in excuse. Mm. Like, I could go do this session, or I could smash out 800 words. Mm. And it's you know, if I'm smashing out 800 words, I might as well have a donut.
As a reward. Yes. Mm.
What about you, Dan? You're a lean and hungry-looking character.
I am the person that you guys hate. I don't do anything to keep myself fit. I couldn't put on weight if you paid me. If you force-fed me, I wouldn't put on weight.
Bastard.
It could be all right. You might have some kind of disease or something.
Yeah. I'm hoping for a tumour.
Mind you, you guys don't seem to need glasses yet.
That's true.
And my dentist, my teeth are going.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Oh, God. I don't want to share this story because it's the stupidest story ever. On Saturday, I was at a party. I've kind of had a cavity sort of gnawing at me and going, "Oh, I'll take care of that eventually." Oh. And I'm at a party.
Well, it's a very manly way to deal with it.
And yeah. And a bit of and this is the bit where it becomes very unmanly. A bit of carrot of everything gets lodged in the cavity. Oh. And just fireworks of pain are going off in my head. And I'm like, "Oh, I'm sorry, I have to leave your lovely party." And then I wander out to the car and I'm like, "Oh, God, what do I do?" I'm like trying to find an emergency dentist. Emergency dentistry doesn't mean what it sounds like it means. Emergency dentistry means coming in 2 days' time.
See, to me, emergency dentistry is going down to the Caxton and going, "You, sir, are a homosexual," and then opening your mouth and letting him punch it out. So that's what I do. Right.
Just a doorknob and some string.
Yes.
The hell, carrot story. That sounds like a Sounds like a moment from a Woody Allen film. You can just imagine him on his first date with, you know, Diane Keaton. Gets a bit of carrot in a cavity.
But I've finally gone...
You don't understand the pain.
So, I mean, enormous amount of pain. Finally managed to... whatever's in there is dislodged, but I'm freaked out and I'm trying to organise a dental appointment. I get a dental appointment for today at 11. So for the last day, I haven't had any problems. Gone into the dentist and said, could you take a look at this toothache thing? And the guy's looked at it and just gone, no, nothing there. No cavity. What? You're fine. Yeah, maybe you got a little bit of seed in there that's just sort of jammed up against your tooth and made it feel painful for a while, but you just get a bit of floss and wipe it out. So I'm like, oh, gangbusters. Don't need any drilling. Don't need any fillings. Brilliant. Gangbusters. Came home, sitting there thinking how lucky I was, realised that I'd gotten confused looking at myself in the mirror and told him to look at the wrong side of my mouth. I paid the dentist $70 to look at teeth that I knew were fine.
He didn't check your whole mouth while you were
those
there?
Those look fine.
No, he did. He totally saw that Grand Canyon full of carrot on the other side of dance. And he said, yeah, I'll be having that $70 too when he comes back tomorrow.
I'm too dumb to live.
It's crazy. I'm exactly the opposite. I wasn't this time, but the last time I went to the dentist, I hadn't been for 2 years. I just had 2 years in a while. And I have a family dentist. I didn't have a family doctor, but we have a family dentist. There's my family. We're obviously velociraptors or something. And so I went to see the family dentist, and he was like rubbing his hands with glee when he saw me. He's like, 2 years, Greg, 2 years. Ah, it's good because my kids are about to go to college too. So I've been looking forward to this. You know, and he's like, and he put it through and he's like, checked my teeth and he cleaned them and he just got more and more crestfallen. And he just went, your family, it's not fair. It is not fair. And I was like, woo!
When can we splice in shark genes so that we can just keep replacing the teeth?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, Greg doesn't need to because, you know, he's got that thing where he just eats ingredients on the floor in the kitchen.
That's true. In fact, when I heard that Dan was having all the problems, I raced over and got that bit of carrot, and that's my dinner for tonight. So he's pre-digested it for me, so it's nice and soft.
Ew. That's right. I'm just going to have a liquid dinner.
Yeah, I'm thinking it might be martini time.
That's fine then.
All right. That would be not my shout.
No, I think it's Asteroid Boys.
Oh, fine, fine. On the rocks then. Ha ha.
Coming over to hit ya.
Bring some carrot.
Hey, it's me, JB. You've been listening to episode 18 of SpartaCast, Slouch Biker of the Apocalypse, and enjoying the company of Mr. Gregoire and Dan Beeston. If too much Greg and Dan is barely enough, why don't you get some more into you over at the smartenoughtoknowbetter.org podcast. And for a change this week, you can do us a favour. Go and find one friend. I'm sure you've all got one friend. Tell them about this podcast and tell them you can't be friends anymore if they don't listen to it next week. And I'ma keep at 'em, crossing my fingers, the Abe says keep at 'em. I'm going down on the weeds and I'ma wreak havoc.